the reason he was acting out was because of this stupid article.
Yeah, he should have just completely ignored that it even existed. Don't even talk about it. And when people, they needed to be, Susie Wiles, get it together. Go and tell all these people, do not react. Do not react. Because, and I tell my kids this, it's, I'm telling you, it's not that hard. They need a homeschooling mom in the Oval Office for crisis management.
Welcome to Rivera and Reeves, the podcast where we break through the bias, report the news, and occasionally trip over our soapboxes while ranting about the headlines.
Every week, we tackle the biggest stories with sharp analysis, unfiltered honesty, and just enough sarcasm to keep it fun.
So pull up a chair, grab your coffee, and join us as we wade through the spin, because the media is trash and we have zero patience for their nonsense.
Hey, friends. Welcome to another episode of Rivera and Reeves. I'm Mercedes, and I'm here with my friend Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
Welcome back. We are back. It is Tuesday. This is basically our Monday for the podcast. I hope you had a wonderful weekend. Hope everybody had a wonderful weekend. And before we went into the weekend, for some reason, DNI director Tulsi Gabbard decided to drop a bunch of documents and declassify a presidential, a presidential daily briefing. I keep forgetting the name, the term, the official name of it, a PDB, presidential daily briefing. So we're going to talk about that. We're also going to touch a little bit on the Wall Street Journal article that was released about a birthday note that Trump sent to Epstein, allegedly, like in 2003 or something, I believe it was.
Yeah, like a zillion years ago that they're just now discovering.
Yeah. And we're not going, we're really going to discuss both of these stories in the context of narrative battles. If you guys really are very interested into what Gabbard released and you want to see documents and you like the nitty-gritty details, I did a monster post on my Substack about it. The really in-depth portion is behind a paywall, but there's a really good summary that is available and free to everyone. But before we get started, if this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. Make sure you hit that follow button so you don't miss another episode. We're here in your ear every Tuesday and Thursday. I just came up with that. I thought that was very clever.
Wonderful. Love it.
All right. So were you even paying attention once this document drop happened on a Friday afternoon, which I do not know, Tiendo, why do it on a Friday afternoon?
I don't know why. I just feel like Friday afternoon we should all take a collective break and nobody should do anything for at least 24 hours, just for everybody's sake, right? But no, I wasn't paying attention. I got to be honest. It's so funny. When I came back to the land of the living yesterday morning, because I really didn't do much online this weekend at all. I was busy. I had hosted a baby shower and church, and it was our anniversary, and I didn't check in much, and it didn't feel like it was a news heavy weekend. But I think sometimes, like, it doesn't feel like that if you're not online. If you're online, it always feels like it's busy, you know what I mean?
So yeah, of course,
like, what came first, the chicken or the egg? Like, did we make it this much? Is it busy because we're online? So I just was like, wow, this is a really chill weekend. And then I realized, no, I don't think it was chill for people who were online. It was just chill for me because I wasn't. And it was wonderful.
Well, I saw it drop on Friday and, you know, it was in my peripheral, but I didn't go too in depth into it until yesterday. I did a preliminary on Friday because I was like, let me set myself up so I don't have to do it all on Monday.
Yeah.
But,
like, so, your foolish friend, Rachel, that's just like, I'll just get to it someday. It's fine. And then I show up yesterday like, oh, there's 17 things I didn't do. I need to do those today. And I think I did one. Oh,
that happens. One, actually, I spent just a ridiculous amount of time going into it, looking at the documents, reading it, running them through AI to make sure that I was understanding them correctly, like double checking on my work.
Yep.
It was a good time, which is why I was actually pretty quiet on my Instagram yesterday. But before we go into it, I have already said that multiple times. I don't know why she dropped this on Friday. I don't know, maybe if it's because she was hoping that it would hit the Sunday news circuit, you know, like the Sunday morning
the shows.
Shows. That's a possibility. She did go on Morning Futures with Maria Bartiromo on Friday. On Sunday to make her case or recap about what it was that she released and what the documents revealed in her opinion. So I'm going to play DNI Gabbard here for you.
Over 100 documents that we released on Friday really detail and provide evidence of how this treasonous conspiracy was directed by President Obama just weeks before he was due to leave office, after President Trump had already gotten elected. This is not a Democrat or Republican issue. This is an issue that is so serious it should concern every single American, because it has to do with the integrity of our democratic republic. What we saw occur here, as the documents we released detailed, was that we had a sitting president of the United States and his cabinet and leadership team, quite frankly, who were not happy with the fact that President Trump had won the election, that the American people had chosen Donald J. Trump to be the next president, commander-in-chief of the United States. And so they decided that they would do everything possible to try to undermine his ability to do what voters tasked President Trump to do.
Okay, so that was Gabbard on Morning Futures making the case or presenting the case about what she had revealed. So you guys can get a full understanding exactly of the case that she is making. I have a little explainer here. So before the election, we're talking about August through October of 2016, U.S. intelligence repeatedly found that there was no Russian threat to the vote count. And I say the vote count specifically because this is something that the legacy media specifically is going to emphasize was revealed in the documents, that it was specifically to the vote count. However, also within that documentation, mind you, this is before the election, the FBI had only low confidence that Russia had was even behind the DNC hacks and the DCC hacks, which were later released on WikiLeaks.
Yeah.
Yet when Obama released his October 7th statement blaming Russia, he deliberately left those details, specifically the FBI low confidence, out of the report. Now, then December 8th happens. Now, this is after the election. And then intelligence finalizes, or is in the process of finalizing, a presidential daily briefing. This is an intelligence report that's giving to the president's about possible intelligence threats, things that need to be on his radar, and especially is important because at this time we are in preparation of a transition. And this report says Russian and criminal actors did not impact recent U.S. election results. Specifically, they're focusing again on cyber attacks, but you can also make the argument that they're possibly speaking about the results as a whole. So this idea that we got for a long time that Russia, and not just Russia like bad actors within Russia, but that the Kremlin themselves, by the direction of Putin, attempted to influence the election. Now, they do admit that it wasn't by flipping votes by the voting machines, but, you know, they're saying that the leaks were specifically designed. And we also remember that there was a huge campaign or a huge narrative that social media bots on Facebook attempted to influence the election. Yeah. When now that time has passed, that actually is considered to be pretty negligible to have any kind of significant effect on the result of the election. But the narrative was that they were helping Trump to win, that they helped Trump win the election. By that afternoon of December 8th, a senior official killed the presidential daily brief, that assessment based on new guidance. That's a quote on new guidance. Now, the following day, Obama and all his heads of the intelligence community. So we're talking about Clapper, Brennan, Rice, Kerry, Loretta Lynch, which was attorney general at the time, and McKay, which I believe was the deputy. I think he was like a deputy FBI director of the FBI. But they held a meeting in the Situation Room. And after that meeting, it was revealed that Obama specifically tasked his intelligence chief to create a new assessment, a new presidential daily brief that focused or included this new guidance. at the same time that this exact same day, December 9th, I can't remember if it's December 9th or December 8th, but mind you, we've suddenly withdrawn this daily briefing. John McCain, who is the head of the Intelligence Committee, is getting briefed on the Steele dossier and the existence of the Steele dossier. At this point, the Steele dossier has already been flagged as not credible, but McCain is being briefed on it. The daily brief is suddenly stopped because of new guidance. So you can kind of make the assumption that this new guidance is the Steele dossier, because all the previous information that we have gotten so far didn't have enough teeth to point the finger that Russia was helping Trump, which then later turned into the Trump-Russia collusion. And then on that same day, the Washington Post comes out with this article. So before there's even an official brief drafted where it says that they're going to dissent and that at the order of the president, they're going to revise it.
They're leaking to the media.
They're leaking to the Washington Post.
Yeah, the media to run with it.
And that story starts, I think the headline is specifically, I put it in my Substack yesterday, but the headline specifically points fingers that Trump won the election, possibly with the aid of Russia.
Yeah.
And then we have 3 weeks later where Obama releases his January 6th assessment, claiming that Putin ordered an influence campaign for Trump based partly on this discredited Steele dossier that was already seen as untrustworthy. Mm-hmm. And so that sets the stage. So what Gabbard is trying to say here is that Obama and the intelligence leadership that was on their way out set the stage for the entire 4 years that we had to endure this Russia-Trump collusion investigation, which if they had been honest from the get-go and just admitted that there was low confidence that you could tie the attempt to influence the election directly to the Kremlin and that they did nothing in regards to trying to tap into voter machines and flipping votes, and that they didn't even have the capabilities to do that, that you probably would have saved us a little bit of grief, a little bit of time. Do you have
Can
any
I
questions?
Be honest about this, though? Like, it came out and I saw a lot of people in the media being like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. And I was like, is it? Like, I think we all, I don't know, at least some of us who have been paying attention are like, yeah, that sounds about right. It's not.
Well, I know I think
it's horrible. I mean, but it's also like totally predictable. And we've been hearing about like how this was a possibility for a long time. And if you learned at all about the Steele dossier, it's kind of like, yeah, that all makes sense. I don't know. Is that just me? I just wasn't surprised by it at all, really.
Well, I think there's several things that you need to there's several things going on here. Number one, the way this is different compared to what we've known in the past, and that the case that Gabbard is trying to make, which I will admit is likely to be a difficult one to make.
Yeah.
Is that this is the smoking gun and this is the evidence that it was Obama specifically that set the stage in order to undermine his successor.
Yeah, I think that's going to be difficult. I don't think.
And
that...
she even, you saw in her clip where she uses the term treasonous. And I don't know if this is to the level of treasonous or even meets the parameters of treasonous. Because typically,
or if it's
treasonous,
just like campaign games, you know?
Yeah. Or I don't even know if it's seditious necessarily.
Right.
Of course, there are, and she has recommended this over to the DOJ.
Yeah.
And so my concern here is a few things. She's released it, which I think is completely makes sense. All right.
Yeah.
Release it, disclose it. That's exactly why she was put into that position.
Mm-hmm.
But she's also starting to do the rounds and using terms like treasonous. And my concern is that she might be over delivering on her promises.
Well, and that's
what she's insinuating could possibly happen.
Right. And I feel like that's happening a lot with this administration. And I think that they all need to have a discussion. And Susie Wiles needs to be like, hey, guys, please stop overselling things to the American people, because Bondi did it. OK. And this is not it hasn't gone over very well with people. They don't want you to come out. I know we all want to like catch the bad guys and release everything and I'll kind of expunge the the deep state all together and have it be like one huge big event, but
that's not going to happen.
No, they have to go about these things a little bit more carefully. And if you keep telling the American people, yep, we're going to arrest all of these guys, or yep, we're going to totally clear out, we're going to close down the FBI building and we're going to do this and that, and then you don't do it, I mean, they're going to stop listening. And I think we just need to take it nice and easy.
Now, it is not Gabbard's responsibility to say what the legal arguments are for possibly bringing any charges. That's up to the Department of Justice. So when, you know, people see this and they see this drop and they immediately think, oh, well, this is it. This is what's going to take Obama down. I highly doubt it. And I highly doubt it for a few reasons. Not only is there a very high bar to get to anything that would be treason or sedition. Okay.
Yeah.
The other thing is that the accompanying possible charges, like I did some preliminary research. So if you're talking about conspiracy, obstruction, that's those sort of things, the statute of limitations has run on most of those.
Yeah.
The only one where you possibly might have a little bit more time or where the statute of limitations would be questionable would be on the issue of conspiracy, mm-hmm. because you can make the argument that the conspiracy continues with the each continued cover up. You know what I mean? Like every time you go out there and you keep trying to push the conspiracy, you can make, there are arguments about like that's, that kind of resets the statute of limitations. But then there's also case law that says, that defines specifically when that happens. So is it necessarily like every time you go out there on the news and continue to cover it up? Or does it start from the first time that you started that narrative and you continue that narrative?
Yeah, that's messy. Yeah,
exactly. They're gonna have a hard and that's time, why I'm like, saying it's not, it, this isn't going to be, and I said this in my Substack post, like anybody who thinks that this is going to be it, that this is when the hammer is going to drop, and any content creator, any person, any journalist that's out there pulling the 2016, you know, legacy media narrative of like, this is it, this it's imminent, or the Adam Schiff of like, I have this smoking gun and we're going to get him. And this is, that's not the case. And don't trust them, no. Because we still don't know.
That's right.
The full extent of Gabbard saying that she's going to release more information. There might be more, there might be something more significant, but I think a lot of people, especially after all of this time, are going to have a very similar sentiment to what you had. It was like, yeah, mm-hmm. duh, obviously that's the case. This is nothing new. At least at a minimum, thank you for confirming to me that I'm not crazy, like I've been told for the last 8 years. I think what really upsets me more with this revelation that I thought about over the weekend is, if anything, it's just a pattern again of how the Democrats are not the party of democracy, and yeah. how they've been pushing for all these years about defending our democracy. And we can see as far back as Obama that they have been doing anything but. In fact, what they have been doing is undermining it. And that pattern, I would argue that maybe he set that up, and that pattern has continued and continued into Biden's administration.
Yeah.
And so I get particularly frustrated by that, because a president that came in on hope and change and mm-hmm. uniting the country and making everything better turned out to be one of the most divisive presidents, especially in his second term. Mm-hmm. And as a last parting shot to finally mm-hmm. just decimate any semblance of unity that the country had, he planted these seeds that then just turned into, it has resulted in the division that we have today as a country. Now, granted, yeah. I'm not going to say that Trump hasn't contributed in it in a way with his rhetoric, but a lot of his rhetoric stems from the fact that he was being spied on mm-hmm. and prosecuted and persecuted, yeah. frankly, yeah. you know, and not yeah. able to actually be president for his first term.
Yeah,
and
speaking of, go ahead, finish your
thought. Well, to me, I just get really, really ticked off, because I've had effects of this personally in my life, with friendships, with business, with family, mm-hmm. because of these seeds that were planted 8 years ago that tried yeah. to portray Trump as the worst threat to our democracy mm-hmm. and the next possible Putin/Hitler.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Well, and there's still echoes of it even in the rhetoric now, like with the Ukraine-Russia conflict. Anytime that they even mention anything that Trump's trying to do, it's he's a Putin apologists. Him and Putin are basically shirtless on a horse riding around. You know, I just remember all of these like stories, and they haven't died. Everything is, they're trying to manufacture like this bromance between him and Putin, when anybody with eyes knows that's not actually happening. I mean, they were trying to make it sound like Trump really respected and had a congenial like relationship with Putin. And so it didn't just happen for a few months there in 2016. This is 10 years later, and the media is still kind of running with it. So one could argue that, yeah, that conspiracy has been going on for a really, really long time, and it had teeth. Like, it stuck, and it has stuck for a lot of people. Ask any run-of-the-mill progressive if Trump has a great relationship with Putin, or if he's
kind of
like,
yeah, they're buddies. Yeah, they're like besties. Yeah. They like crochet friendship bracelets.
It's just still in their brain. Kind of, it's the same way that the whole narrative around him being an authoritarian like Hitler is now seeped in their brain. Like, they can't unsee it. They can't, that's just kind of truth to them at this point. And so it's been really effective. But I was going to ask, did you see Trump's post this week, the video of Barack Obama in the Oval getting arrested? I was like, yes. Dude, put your phone down, bro. Like, stop
it. Well, and that's what I mean. It's like stuff like that. It's like, of course you can give some fault to like this. This is not the most presidential president that we have ever had.
Right.
Obviously. Okay?
Trust me. We talk about it a lot. Yeah.
We talk about it all the time. You know, he posted that. He posted a few out of pocket things this weekend. He posted that AI video of Obama being arrested.
Yeah.
He posted like a Brady Bunch
what?
It was like, I say Brady Bunch as in it was a grid of all of these, of Obama and all these other intelligence heads that were in orange jumpsuits with, they had just all been arrested.
Oh my.
And it's just like, it's frustrating to me because first of all, that's a distraction. From, and some people would also argue that this release from Gabbard is a well-timed distraction from what we were talking about last week with Epstein, which we're going to go into a little bit. But I think one of my frustrations right now with this, and I think it's just unfortunately the environment we are in with politics, is as much as I appreciate what this administration is doing, and they've had some really great wins over the last 6 months, we also have the problem of them performing like Bondi has performed, and like Trump, of course, always performs, which sometimes is good and it's to our benefit, but then also it's sometimes frustrating with posts like that where it's almost like he's trying, like he's not wanting to influence, because he just thinks it's funny and he agrees with it and he's posting it.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, people who are, you know, don't speak Trump or whatever, see it as him threatening his opposition with arrest.
I think it's just stupid. I think it's stupid, and I think it's silly. And I'm like, please stop. Please stop it. I mean, but then you have Michelle Obama, who's on her podcast or being interviewed, talking with her brother or whatever, saying that, like, the day that President Trump was like elected, not elected, but
well, that she cried for 30 minutes.
She cried for 30 minutes straight, uncontrollable. And I was sitting there when I heard that thinking, I don't think I've ever sat and cried for 30 minutes uncontrollably for anything. And I have children and people I love have died. And there's been sad things that have happened in my life. And I never, I mean, like I've wept. Yes, of course. 30 minutes uncontrollably because someone, that's how deranged these people are. I mean, truly consumed with very confusing realities. Like they are not all together living in the real world. If this is the case, that's pretty.
Well, and that also kind of supports the narrative, or not, I don't even want to say narrative, but the fact, like, what would you be willing to do?
That's what I'm saying. These people are delusional. They really do think he is as bad as they have concocted in their mind. Mm-hmm. They think that he is an existential threat to them, to their way of living, to our country, to our democracy, to everything that they understand, that they truly believe that. I mean, I guess if you do believe that, then sure. I mean, maybe cry for 30 minutes uncontrollably, but it just seems unhinged. So either you're ruled by your emotions and some alternate reality, or you're lying. So either
for
one.
For dramatic effect. Or they're making one things is, out for
like really
effect.
Sad that's the amount of brain space he owns in your head.
Free so. In your head, for sure. Yeah. Well, so this story drops, and then of course I do an analysis of like how is everybody covering it. Now, conservative, independent media, people mm-hmm. like ourselves, a good portion of them are going like, "This is the next Watergate. This is the bomb. This is going to be it. This is," and huge respect and excitement, of course. Which I do, you know, I am glad that Tulsi is now out there starting to release documents like she promised. However, I also have the concern. Now, Tulsi is much more measured than Bondi, so I don't think that she's just going to put stuff out there for the sake of putting things out there. I do truly believe that, and I agree with her assessment that this is evidence or further evidence of how pre-planned or how the seeds were planted that set the stage for the mess that we had to deal with for the entire Trump presidency during his first term. Now, much of the legacy media and Democrats are either claiming that, first of all, that it's politically motivated, conclusions that she is reaching are error-ridden, that she doesn't really understand what she's reading, that, you know, and then also that she's concocting another treasonous conspiracy, because there's, of course, a collective narrative on the left and with legacy media that Tulsi Gabbard is a conspiracy theorist, nutsoid that's sympathetic to, I don't know, Syrian dictators and a Russian asset. Mm-hmm. I think I can't even remember if it was Hillary one time that specifically said that she was a Russian asset.
Yeah.
So that's the narrative that we're getting from the left. Then there's also the fact that this drops right after we have gone through, what was it, like a week of Epstein news cycle?
Yeah, I wondered about that. And also, I mean, we'll talk about it with the MLK stuff, but I just think the timing is really interesting.
I mean, yes, but also at the same time, I don't know, like when people are like, oh, this is a distraction, or the timing is really interesting.
I don't necessarily think that, but I also think they could have released it at any time. And I just,
that's the thing. I don't know. I mean, think about the MLK stuff. Like all of this stuff has to go through some type of process. You can't just grab it and release it.
No, I get that.
Of course, do you hurry it up because the news cycle and you're close to finishing up, and so you hurry it up right before at a good time? I don't know. You know, there's a possibility. Obviously, the narrative shifts. However, I will also say that I think that as much as the Democrats and the legacy media and like network news is trying to rehash the Trump-Epstein relationship, or at least like what they're trying to present as the Trump-Epstein relationship. The Wall Street Journal article that came out, I think it was on the 17th, which was Thursday, if I'm not mistaken, turned out to be a ridiculous nothing.
Yeah, it was dumb, and I don't even like talking about it because it's that stupid. And It is. It's stupid. Like, look, no one's even talking about it anymore because it doesn't matter. And now they're bringing out some girl, some like the media's bringing
CNN,
out some girl.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, you guys, stop. Get a new line of offense. Try something new because this stuff is stupid. It's so dumb. And the article itself was poorly written. The piece of evidence that they don't even have a picture of, like they don't even have it. Like there's nothing to see. It's stupid. It was
ridiculous. So the and
I was
what
like,
really
Wall Street Journal just totally embarrassed themselves. Like I hope.
Well,
we
what
sue
frustrated
them.
Me about the entire thing is that I think what really pushed the entire news cycle in regards to Epstein wasn't just the memo, which we've already like shared our opinion on that, but it was the way Trump was behaving and the fact that he was all of a sudden saying this is Democrats and this is a hoax. And we're all like, where is this talk and this narrative of a hoax being like, where is this coming from? And then it started to leak, like there was conversations happening that the Wall Street Journal was, or that one of the three major news publications, newspaper news publications is how it initially dropped. One of the three major news publications was working on an article and that was going to be a hit piece and may have some damning information on the Trump alleged Epstein relationship. I shouldn't say alleged. They did have a relationship, but what they're trying to do, like they had a relationship before anybody knew how gross Epstein was before that became public. And Trump cut him off, I think, 3 years before he was even charged. So let's just put that out there.
Yeah.
So the Wall Street Journal ends up being the publication. And apparently they reached out for comment and for verification of this alleged birthday note, 2003 birthday note that was handwritten with some sketch of a naked woman. And it had like a poem in there, which makes like, what? You think Trump is out there writing poetry to his friends? I don't even, it makes no sense to me. Like, it's literally the stupidest thing I have ever heard. And mind you, this one note was part of a collection of notes that was leather bound and gifted to Epstein for his birthday. And a whole bunch of other people also wrote notes that the Wall Street Journal doesn't ask to look at, doesn't report on, doesn't provide any additional. Like they mention, I think, Dershowitz and maybe somebody else, like public names that were already affiliated with Epstein, but they don't give like any additional real investigative information on what the other notes contained. So they try to make it seem like pervy Epstein and Trump are writing each other little love notes or whatever. Like, this is essentially what the Wall Street Journal is trying to report on. It is the stupidest thing. And not only was it, of course, the Wall Street Journal, fine, they wrote something stupid, shocker, right? Mm-hmm. But what's even more frustrating is how Trump reacted to it, which was what created this ridiculous news cycle, which in my opinion, the way he was acting out, the reason he was acting out was because of this stupid article.
Yeah, he should have just completely ignored that it even existed. Don't even talk about it. And when people, they needed to be, Susie Wiles, get it together. Go and tell all these people, do not react. Do not react. Because, and I tell my kids this, it's, I'm telling you, it's not that hard. They need a homeschooling mom in the Oval Office for crisis management. Because it's like I tell my kids, if you didn't do anything wrong, if you're not guilty of anything, just stop reacting. If your sister says something to you that is rude or incorrect or that you don't like, don't react. When you react, you make the problem worse, okay, for yourself and just in general. So stop it. And that's what they all needed to be directed. If you're asked a question about the Epstein hoax, say, we are working to be the most transparent administration in history. And we have, Trump has ordered the DOJ to release anything that the public should be privy to. And that's that. Hey, did you read that Wall Street Journal piece? No, you know what? I've been busy taking care of the country. I haven't had a chance to read it, but I'm sure your network will keep me up to date on what's going on. Thank you very much. I have work to do. Bye-bye. Like, don't engage. Do not engage. But what he does is he makes it like a monster issue by overreacting to what is really everybody who read it, who even made time to read it because nobody cared, could see. It was a nothing burger. And it was,
I read the whole thing and I was just like,
this is so dumb.
I'm like, this, this is it?
And so when he overreacts, it's like, what are you trying to hide? Just if it's nothing, it's nothing. Let it go. But well, he, I think he really does take things personally. I think he's a little bit more like...
Well, he's thin-skinned in that sense. He doesn't like to be embarrassed or anything. I think he's particularly sensitive about these things because they have been a line of attack. And I think he was especially frustrated because he views, which is true, you know, the administration has some really great successes. They were coming off like a 2-week high, you know, and then the Wall Street Journal reach out to him for comment on this. And it starts to gain some traction and murmurings among the, you know, Democrat and legacy media. And he starts to get frustrated that they're focused on Epstein and not focused on all the amazing work that he's doing. And so he starts to act out, which is not beneficial to anybody.
Yeah.
And if anything, like if you did want to respond to it, you'd be like, you could have scooped the Wall Street Journal. So the Wall Street Journal called me because about this birthday card that I sent to Epstein 3 years before anybody knew that he was a pervert. Like almost a year before I booted him from my club. And yeah, I wrote, like, he could have even admitted to writing the note. He's like, yeah, I wrote the note. It was off colored. It was tasteless.
Yeah.
Trump be Trumping. You know what I mean?
Like, it's not like the American people would be surprised by this at all.
No.
I mean, hi, people elected him into office after the Billy Bush tapes. So
yeah. So
I even read it and I was like, yeah, that just, I mean, sure, maybe he did. But if he did, do I like it? Would I be happy if it was uncovered that my husband wrote it? I'd probably be like, not
absolutely
great.
Not.
Not loving
but
that.
Also at the same time, it's like, what?
It was, if anything, it seemed a little innocent for Trump to me. Like, I was like, that's all you got? I really thought this was going to be, I thought it would have a little bit more meat on its bones. If they were going to make this big of a deal out of it. And they did. They made a huge deal. Again, don't condone it, don't like it. But I also think this is not journalism. You have no evidence. It's stupid.
Well, and then I think yesterday, was it yesterday that over the weekend, even the New York Times did this follow-up article where I think it was titled Inside the Long Friendship Between Trump and Epstein. And it recaps literally everything that is already public, everything that we already know. The article itself confirms that a lot of this happened, all of this happened, not a lot of it, all of this happened before it was even known publicly known what Epstein was doing secretly or whatever behind the scenes, and that Trump was not had cut him off. Yeah. But then in the same sentence, they would be like, Trump, I don't know, XYZ, and also Epstein did this, even though they weren't connected.
It's stupid. It's bad journalism. It's just dumb. It's just I don't even know what would have motivated them to do it. I don't know why an editor would have said, go to print with that. It's dumb. It's just stupid.
Well, okay. So have you at all seen the conspiracy theory that has been bubbling in progressive liberal social media circles, specifically when it comes to J.D. Vance and the Wall Street Journal?
No.
It is so stupid. Okay. So... there is a narrative battle happening, okay? Right now, the Democrats really want you to think that they're trying to bring up the Trump-Epstein thing again, which, of course, by the way, granted, the only actual journalism that I have seen from journalists is them asking Democrats, well, if there's something there about Trump, why didn't you release it in the 4 years that you guys were in office? And they're all like, well, haven't been pushing this conspiracy theory, this entire conspiracy theory is the Republicans. It's not their concern.
Yeah.
Now you have normie. Well, I don't know if normie is actually the correct term for them, but you have creators and commentators on social media, specifically TikTok, that have concocted this conspiracy theory that J.D. Vance went the day before or days before the Wall Street Journal drop this article, because in case you guys don't know, to go and meet with Rupert Murdoch. And in case you guys don't know, Rupert Murdoch owns the Wall Street Journal. And Rupert Murdoch also owns Fox News. So allegedly, J.D. Vance went to Montana the days before this article dropped to meet with Rupert Murdoch. Secret, super secret meeting. And they're speculating that this was an attempt, that J.D. Vance is working behind the scenes to undermine Trump, to set himself up to somehow take over the presidency or divide, or are trying to separate Trump from MAGA so he can put himself to replace Trump as the MAGA leadership.
He doesn't need to replace him. He'll probably run in 3 years.
This conspiracy is ridiculous because they really want to create this narrative of the splintering of MAGA or the Republican Party.
Yeah, they tried to do it with Elon Musk, and then Musk is gone, and now they need
something. Mind you, this Wall Street Journal, if anything, reunited everyone after everybody was questioning and trying to figure out this Epstein, the way he was behaving about Epstein. Mm-hmm. And this article releases, and everybody's like, well, this is stupid. And it kind of reunites everyone. Now, mind you, J.D. Vance did go and see Rupert Murdoch in June, all the way back in June. It was not in July, or it was not days before this article dropped. In fact, Rupert Murdoch was with Trump at FIFA. I think it was like 2 or 3 days before this article dropped, and they were very chummy and very friendly. And so they believe, this conspiracy, that J.D. Vance is working behind the scenes with other Republicans because they're trying to get rid of Trump, but they're concerned because they think J.D. Vance is even worse, and that we're going, the imminent fracturing of MAGA and the Republican Party is coming. And I'm just like, I think you are confused.
Yeah. I think you want that to happen.
I think you want that to happen, but I think you are very confused. Yeah. And then I think it's fair to be speculative of all of this, specifically because, like I said, it's like, why are you dropping Tulsi Gabbard? Why are you dropping these documents? Mm-hmm. Literally, I don't know, like the day after the Wall Street Journal article and right after we've gone through this entire Epstein thing. So there's definitely a narrative battle going on. I don't suspect, I really think that we've come towards the end of this, specifically when it comes to Epstein. I'm sure it'll bubble up again. I'm sure the legacy media wants to keep it going. But there's no there. Mm-hmm. And I really don't, and I still don't know if we're ever going to see any additional documents. I mean, the president did put out a post instructing the release of documents that were, as long as they weren't under any kind of court order.
Right.
As long as they were pertinent, as long as they can be disclosed, he did put out that statement. But also, there's a lot of caveats in that statement. So yeah. I'm not exactly holding my breath for anything. But we'll see how this continues to battle out. And we'll also see if Gabbard can, what's the word I'm looking for, can fulfill any of the promises that she makes or that she's insinuating. And if we have more documents that could possibly be released over the next few days.
Yeah.
I'm very curious. I love digging into documents. I don't know
why.
You do? I do. I'm like one of those weird nerds. This is why I was pre-law.
Yes.
Like, I just love the whole process of having stacks of paper and everything flagged and a bunch of notes and digging. Mm-hmm. I love that, especially because nobody's talking to me usually when I'm doing that. Well, other than when you create yourself like a barrier of paper all around you,
true.
It's like,
that's
it's true. A little safe space right there. Yeah. Nobody bothers you.
Yeah, that doesn't happen for me. They will find a way to still
talk. They will find a way. And in all of this also, I mean, it's worth mentioning, Gabbard released, 230,000 documents that were MLK related?
Yeah, upwards of 240,000.
Yeah, I'm not going into those. That's too many. It's too many. And frankly, if I'm going to be completely honest, I'm not that invested in that. It was so long
ago. You're not invested in finding out if the CIA and American government?
Well, they did.
Well, how would you know unless you go through the files?
I mean, I don't know about CIA, but there's a public letter from was it Hoover at the time? FBI? Mm-hmm. That was sending letters to blackmail MLK. Mm-hmm. Like, that's known, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if they assassinated him, which is what the claim is. And mm-hmm. I also don't suspect that those documents are going to provide evidence that the CIA definitively him.
You're going to need to go through the 240K documents.
I'm not doing it. Look, there's already, we have enough of a new cycle. I don't need to go back. What is that? 60, 70 years or whatever? I can't even do the math.
Around the same time as JFK. I mean, it's
there are other people that can start that. Like, that's why independent media is great, because you can be like, this person's covering that. You can go over there.
Yep.
I'm more interested in the current. Speaking of Democrat and Democrat messaging, yesterday was the anniversary of Biden dropping out of the election.
It's been a year, man.
I know. Isn't that wild?
Yeah, it is. I mean, this year went fast.
We've been podcasting for over a year. That means
that's
insane. That time flies, girl.
It does. Well, it really does.
In celebration of that momentous event.
Oh, dear word.
Hunter Biden decides he's going to go and do a podcast, a mini podcast circuit.
It was so weird. I thought it was like a AI generated video.
So he has done two. I don't even know this Channel 5 one that went viral yesterday. I have no idea who that dude is or what Channel 5
is. I was going to say, what is it?
Channel
5 is in California. No, it's not in California. We had KTLA was Channel 5 when I lived there. It was one of the, back when people watched televisions with actual stations.
This a California related?
I don't know.
Local news.
I just know we had Channel 2, 4, 5, 7, 9, 11, and 13. Those were our channels back when you had to like stand up to go like turn the wheel on your television. Channel 5 was KTLA. That was, I don't know, but why is he doing, it has to be for something different. Why would he be doing like a regional podcast? I mean, then again, who wants him on their podcast? He's a loose gun. Let's just put it that way. He was sharing feelings yesterday.
That particular interview was loaded with some wild clips. We're going to share a little bit here. And you may not even hear most of them because I'm going to have to bleep out so much of it. I don't even know. I was even telling Rachel, I don't even know if I can play this and not just completely bleep out the entire conversation because it was so ridiculous. But in addition to that podcast, he also did a podcast that's called Around the Table or All Around the Table. I can't remember exactly. So, here we go. So Channel 5 is an American digital media company and web channel hosted on YouTube.
Oh, and I was totally
interviewer
wrong.
Interviewer is Andrew Callahan, a journalist, filmmaker, and comedian known for founding Channel 5, previously called All Gas, No Breaks. So he's a content creator that we are unfamiliar with. But he also went on a podcast with, I think it's so funny, like the Democrats are so desperate to find like their Joe Rogan. The former head of the DNC now has a podcast. Mm-hmm. And he also went on that podcast where they basically just reaffirmed each other. And it was the weirdest thing, as it was obviously not hard hitting. It was not challenging to Hunter Biden at all. The entire thing, like I have a clip here. So in this clip, Harrison, who was the former head of the DNC, tries to make a defense or make the case of remember when Obama and Biden did that DNC fundraiser and he like froze on the stage and was confused. So they have a conversation where they're giving context to that, which this is, if this happened, it's news to me. It's something that I never heard of.
Mm-hmm. They've been playing this video of President Obama and President Biden on the stage and President Obama grabbing President Biden's elbow to guide him off. Hunter, I was there. My wife and I were sitting right in the front row.
10 seats down from you.
Right there. Do you remember there were about two or three guys, young white guys in their 20s, who stood up and they were yelling at the president about Palestine.
Exactly. About Gaza.
About Gaza. Yeah. And he was listening to see what they were saying.
Yeah.
And that's when Obama grabbed his elbow to guide him off so he didn't engage in that. It wasn't that he like spanned out and like didn't know where the hell he was. I asked my wife just so that to make sure that I didn't have cognitive decline. I was like, Marie, don't you remember that? She said, yeah, I remember that. And I thought it was so rude for them to do that while in the midst of the whatchamacallit of this event. Yeah. But the president was trying to listen to see what they were saying to him.
You and I both know one thing, too, is that what is the one thing that drives Obama more crazy about my dad than anything? is when he sits around and he continues to talk to people in a crowd, because then he can't also leave the stage at the same time.
That's exactly
and he
right.
never likes hanging around.
He doesn't.
To do,
he doesn't
to
like
do rope
taking.
Lines.
He doesn't like.
He doesn't like
rope lines.
Have you heard that story before?
No, I've heard. Oh gosh, who was it? It was when Original Sin was coming out. Everybody was, you know, Tapper and his co-author were doing Alex Thompson.
Alex
right?
Thompson, yeah.
They were doing the circuit of shows, and different people were asking, you know, different questions about specific events where he seemed really out of it. And I remember a couple of them asking about that event, I believe, and different people having different remembrances of what happened, but not that specifically. I just can't figure out why we're still talking about that.
Well, I don't understand. That's the thing. And that's specific. I don't understand. Well, specifically on that one, all I recall is how we were told that we were imagining that he never froze and that he just walked off the stage. Like, at no point was that ever given as an explainer. So that's news to me. Also, I don't understand why Hunter Biden is suddenly, a year from when his father dropped out, mm-hmm. is deciding to do this circuit. And I don't understand, like, how do you think this is a good idea? I guarantee you that Democrats are not happy that he's doing this, especially.
Yeah, I want to know the motivation behind it. Like, who's telling you to go do this? Who's encouraging it? Who's asking you to be on their podcast? That's my question. I mean, he could ask to be on this one, and I'd say, that's okay. Thanks. No thanks.
Well, my guess is that he's reaching out to people to be on the podcast because, I mean, we're talking about, literally a year out. So my guess is that he's like, okay, we're a year out. I want to start talking to people, defending it. I think there's even, was it Miranda Devine from the New York Post where she was speculating, which this would be the biggest Christmas present
of all time. Oh, that he's going to run for president?
That he's going to try and run for 2028.
There's no chance. There's not one Democrat strategist or anyone at all that wants him to run. Like, what? That would have to be the worst idea of all time. But I say go for it. I want
absolutely.
Rally
I want
behind
you
him,
guys.
Please.
So when he did that podcast, he was pretty tame mm-hmm. on that podcast. And I guess it's because he's speaking to the head of the DNC. Mind you, he had some real choice words for Democrats in general, especially Clooney, when he sat down with Channel 5. And you guys may not hear most of this because there's a lot of colorful language in this one.
Listen to you. What right do you have to step on a man who's given 52 years of his life to the service of this country and decide that you, George Clooney, are going to take out basically a full page ad in the New York Times to me and James Carville, who hasn't run a race in 40 years, and David Axelrod, who had one success in his political life, and that was Barack Obama, and that was because of Barack Obama, not because of David Axelrod, and David Plouffe, and all of these guys, and the Pod Save America guys, who were junior speech writers in Barack Obama's Senate staff, who've been dining out on the relationship with him for years, making millions of dollars. The Anita Dunns of the world, who's made $40-50 million off the Democratic Party, they're all going to insert their judgment over a man who has figured out, unlike anybody else, how to get elected to the United States Senate over 7 times, how to pass more legislation than any president in history, how to have a better midterm election than anybody in history, and how to garner more votes than any president that has ever run. And they're going to replace their judgment for his.
So he looks healthy and well.
Yeah. I just feel like this is like the last gasp of a family member. What I'm saying, though, is like the final thing that they can think of is to go out and now throw everybody who they once were chummy with under the bus because it didn't go their way and they're out of office and they have no power whatsoever anymore and they won't have any. They're going to become irrelevant, which I think is really sad because if you like everything he's talking about, he's going back in time and kind of, I think, a little bit of revisionist history. And I think it's sad. He knows that his dad is now going to be remembered not for anything really great. And his legacy has been sealed by the mismanagement of his administration, what they left. I mean, they left America in a mess. And also, he was pushed out. It was like a palace coup. We talk about it all the time, and that's what everybody's going to remember.
And he specifically, in this podcast, he brings up multiple things. He specifically points the finger at Nancy Pelosi for pushing his father out. He makes an excuse for his father's performance during the debate, saying, did you see this about the Ambien?
Yeah. Well, I didn't see it, but I heard it.
Okay. Let me play it for everyone first real quick.
I know exactly what happened in that debate. He flew around the world, basically, and the mileage that he could have flown around the world 3 times.
Yeah.
He's 81 years old. He's tired as shit. Give him Ambien to be able to sleep. He gets up on the stage, and he looks like he's a deer in the headlights.
Was news to me.
I mean, it was news to me, too, but we don't even know if that's true. It's Hunter Biden.
And it also, you know, it's like a cover up and excuse because there's nothing on any of his medical reports. Well, obviously, they didn't even mention the fact that he had cancer, but there's nothing on his medical reports that he was taking Ambien. I don't understand. And I'm sure that the Democrats are like, dude, go back into your hole and stop talking.
Yep.
He even goes through this entire discussion about crack cocaine and how you can actually make crack cocaine at home.
He talked about crack on this episode.
You didn't see that?
No.
Do you want to see it?
I mean, what? What? Okay. No.
You know what I mean? Well, because they think cocaine, Scarface, very cool. Yeah. Crack cocaine, they think The Wire.
Oh, in that sense? Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean? They don't know how similar the chemical compounds are.
Well, the only difference between crack cocaine and cocaine is sodium bicarbonate and water and heat, literally.
That's it. And those things are pretty much free if you go to like a science store.
This is free. You can go to a your neighborhood convenience store and just get. Anyway, I don't want to tell people how to make crack cocaine,
but
it literally is a managed jar of cocaine and baking soda.
How different is the experience?
Oh, it's vastly, vastly different. And like for real, I feel.
So he goes on to talk about. He keeps saying, like, I'm not going to talk about it, but then he kind of keeps talking about it. Yeah, but that's why I'm saying, like, this interview in particular was pretty unhinged. And this is also why I'm saying that I guarantee you that the Democrats are not happy that he's doing this. I also don't understand, is he doing this on his own? Is he doing this with the, like, encouragement of his father and Joe Biden? I legitimately don't get it, but people are speculating that he might be trying to set himself up for 2028 run. He also specifically said in that interview on that Channel 5 YouTube channel that the reason his father lost or ended up essentially the reason that he lost or had to withdraw is because Democrats stopped supporting him. And how dare they betray his father, as in Pelosi and Clooney and the Democrats.
Yeah.
And then he goes into the spiel of, you know, this man who has served and all of this legislation that he passed and a 50 plus career, and you betrayed him. How dare you betray him and underhand him? And that's why he lost the election. I'm like, dude, he lost the election because he doesn't know where he is.
Yeah.
He's 80 plus years old and he would not be able to serve another 4 years. And it was stupid of you and your stepmother or whatever of Jill Biden to push and convince your father, who's not well, to run for another 4 years along with all of the other Politburo support or push that you got from like Donovan and Klein and everything like that.
What a mess. That's really, it's just sad.
So
it's sad also, like, from a parental standpoint. Like, you just have so many hopes. And as a parent, I'm always praying for my kids' future and that they'll, like, walk in the ways that we've trained them. We've prayed for them. We want them to flourish and follow God's path for them. And to watch them kind of implode on a national stage, like, over and over again. I mean, that, even if you're not particularly religious, it's still got to be hard. I can't imagine. And I have not a big Biden fan, but as a parent, that's got to be hard for, you know, he lost his wife and his daughter, and then he lost his son, and then Hunter, you know, with drugs and his illicit behavior. And then, like, he gets sober, apparently. But then he comes out and just, I don't know. It's sad.
And it's sad. And it doesn't look well. And if you look back on the entire dynamics of the Biden family, I saw this interview one time of Chuck Todd and Jake Tapper, where they were talking about how for a long time, the Biden family narrative was after Biden lost his wife and his daughter, and he had two sons that almost lost their life in this auto accident. He won the election. He was to become senator. He was about to be inaugurated. And instead of pulling out and moving to D.C., which was the plan, he kept his kids in Delaware with the family that they were that they knew. And he made sure that he traveled back home to be with them every time. And that was the narrative. The dutiful father that traveled back and forth between Washington, D.C. and Delaware to make sure that he was home with his sons every night for dinner. But then they also point out, now looking back on it, you can also be like, regardless of the fact that he had, that all of that trauma had just happened in his life and to his children, he was so ambitious that he went to work and left them every day and continued to work as a senator instead of staying home and being with his children in an area that they were familiar with.
And on a more daily basis, like just having a role to play in their life. You cannot underestimate how hard some of these ambitious politicians work, or not even, you don't have to think that they work hard. They just work a lot. I mean, I was listening to an interview of someone on the Hill talking about why he's stepping down. And he was essentially like, I'm sick of working 85, 90 hours a week when we work and lobbying, living in DC for 4 or 5 days of the week and lobbying all the time and always being at the behest of my cell phone, having to wake up in the middle of the night to go do stuff. Like, it's not a life. And if you're doing it with for the right reasons, I get it. It's a definitely a sacrifice we make for our country in some situations. I mean, a couple months ago when I was at Capitol Hill, I was talking with some of the staffers, and these are just staffers. These aren't even people in high positions. And they're like, yeah, since Trump's been inaugurated, I think I don't sleep more than 3.5-4 hours a night. I'm here at 7 in the morning. I don't leave until 8:30 at night. And these are people with children, like women, mothers. And I'm just thinking, all right, there's going to be trade-offs. And you're seeing that in these interviews. This is a very hurt, damaged man.
Well, and I think also the dynamic later, you know, with Beau Biden, because for a long time, Beau Biden was the heir apparent.
Yeah.
And then Hunter Biden was the spare that was working for the family. So one was in government, one was supposed to be in private, and that's how they were supposed to work together. And then, you know, Beau passes away, and now the heir apparent is no more. And the narrative, like if you read the books and you read between the lines, it's always been that Hunter was kind of second fiddle or taken advantage of.
Well, and you watch that play out in other different like powerful families. Like you look at the, you know, the royal family, and Harry is completely damaged. And, you know, they both lost in a similar, not in a similar way, but they both of them lost their mothers, and they had dads that were preoccupied. Charles with his lady friend and Joe with ruling the world. And
or attempting to, anyway.
You can't, you can't underestimate what those types of things do to children. We all say that kids are resilient, and they are, but they also need like constant presence of a mother and a father. They just do.
Yeah.
And when that, in the absence of that, things can happen.
Well, we are watching how in this situation it just plays out for the public. And if you guys haven't seen those clips of Hunter, like, he looks not well. He just looks squirrely. He looks glass-eyed. He, you know, it could be that's what you look like years after drug abuse. I don't know. I have no idea. But that's not exactly the spokesperson that I would be putting out for the family at this time, considering everything that's going on, especially with there still being an investigation from the House Oversight Committee. So I have no idea. Did you? So you saw real quick, I just want to touch on this because I thought it was funny. Colbert lost his show. He's been canceled. The Late Show, right?
Yeah.
The talking point right now is, now, mind you, that is CBS. Mm-hmm. CBS is going through a process, which is one of the reasons that their claim that the settlement of 60 Minutes was because of this, that there's supposed to be, I think Paramount is purchasing CBS. I can't remember the details, but the point is, mm-hmm. is that they're setting up for a big purchase.
Yeah.
As they're trying to make themselves more friendly because of, this is the narrative, because of the Trump administration has to approve this merger that is potentially going to happen. Now, and on top of that, during all of this happening, mm-hmm. Colbert gets the news that his show is going to be canceled in mm-hmm. May.
So, yeah. Because it was making no money. Nobody watches
correct.
It.
Correct. Okay, so the right
so that's
now,
why it's being canceled, not because of Trump. I know what you're going to say already. I'm sure that they're saying that. Like, it's big bad
absolutely.
Trump did this.
The narrative
he canceled
is,
Colbert.
Right now is that Colbert is getting canceled because of how negative he speaks of Trump, and that this is all because of fascism and because mm-hmm. of censorship. And yeah. that CBS, on their own, because they're very concerned about the way Colbert continues to speak negatively of Trump, and it's going to have a negative effect on the purchase that's coming up, and that is why he has been canceled. Mind you, it costs $100 million to run a year to run this show, and I think there was a report that they lost $40 million.
Yes,
dollars.
That's what I heard as well. Why would you do that? I'm sorry. It's horrible business.
But it is. The talking point has gained so much traction that there were, I guess, not protests outside of the Late Show.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
But it was
people with signs.
Yeah.
Trump is bad. Orange man's canceling Colbert, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, where they were chanting, Trump must go, Colbert stays. And it's like,
like three people were there. Nobody watches Colbert. I'm sorry.
It was a little bit more than three people. But...
Okay, kind of, though. I mean, but kind of. Like, I just think that have any of these people ever run a business before? You're not going to keep anybody on if they're bleeding $40 million a year. Like, why would you?
Yes, but that is just you showing your capitalist
yeah.
evil.
Yes, yes. I'm a capitalist. Yes, great. And all of those people also kind of want the benefits of capitalism, but they just don't want to be the ones to have to work and manage these businesses. It's like, come on. I don't know. I just think it's silly. It's a dumb talking point, and I don't think anybody actually believes it. He's not making money. I mean,
well,
I know
I
some
mean,
people are going to believe it, but
I was like, nobody within reason
ignorance.
Is going to believe it. But the media, I watched, was it on CNN? I can't remember, but I watched a discussion happen where they were debating or trying to bring up the question of whether or not this was censorship and not business.
Yeah.
And the argument that they were making is that, well, it's not business because they didn't try to cut costs. Instead, they just canceled the show all out. And I'm like, but you're even if you cut costs, it's not a model that is profitable right now
at all.
Like, are you gonna, if you go out, you got $100 million and you're losing $40 million, how much are you gonna cut, and are you gonna still be able to have and run the same show? Like, at some point you do the analysis and it's clear that it's not sustainable.
Yeah. I don't.
And they're not even, and it's not even, if it was politics, I would argue this, if it was politics and if it was censorship, they would just bring somebody else in.
Yeah.
And get rid of Colbert.
Oh, they're just cutting it altogether.
They're getting rid of the entire program. So
yeah.
If it was really about censorship, it was really about, they would go and find some Trump-friendly like comedian or something,
yeah.
or someone that's more middle of the road, and put them in his place and just get rid of him. They wouldn't get rid of the entire apparatus of The Late Show.
Yeah.
So
I just think that, like, normies don't.
Don't care,
and they don't believe that it's Trump's now, you know, holding all the strings of all of these organizations. I mean, look at what happened. Wall Street Journal, Fox News are owned by the same man, and they just published an article about a 20-year-old love letter. He doesn't own all these companies. He can't just, like, unilaterally say, I don't like Colbert, please fire him.
Well, and I think it's a real joke when they're trying, like, it's very similar to what I hear a lot from the Democrats and from progressives are very similar things that we talked about during the Biden administration, during COVID, and during like the end of Trump's, actually the majority of Trump's presidency, especially when it came to censorship on social media platforms, algorithms, the news media, not willing to sit down or platform any.
Yeah.
And they're using very similar arguments that we made then. So you could be like, everybody's just upset that their guy isn't in office and that this is the talking point that dominates. However, I don't think that's correct, because you still have all of these publications, Washington Post, the New York Times, the legacy media, who maybe they're behaving a little bit better this time and not just jumping on everything, but they push narratives. They have an agenda. And I would even say this of Fox News. They all have an agenda because they all have an audience and they're all catering to that audience.
Yeah.
And nobody is, it's like when they try and say that NPR and PBS is being attacked and that they're losing their, that freedom of speech is being attacked because they're going to lose federal funding. No, freedom of speech, it gets attacked if you get shut down by your government.
Yeah.
Not because the government no longer wants to give you free money so that's you can go and peddle their messaging. Like, that's you can still exist. You can still say whatever you want. We just don't have to pay for it. Yeah. And I think it's really wild. What's frustrating to me is this victimization that is coming out from the Democrats and from the left, claiming that they're being censored. When, please tell me when you got deplatformed. Please tell me when there was a campaign against you for your livelihood because you said the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? Please tell me when the administration came in directly and tried on the back channels to influence or put pressure onto social media platforms and leak information and news reports to undermine you or anything that you've been talking about.
Like, there is,
it's not the same. Not no, to
it's
the level.
Just, it's rich coming from them.
It's like you have suddenly forgotten. And so this whole Colbert thing, I bring it up because it's just, again, a symbol of, you have people outside protesting because they believe that Colbert is getting censored and that this is more evidence of fascism as opposed to the fact that the dude is a joke and makes no money.
Well, and maybe the stuff he's saying, no one has an appetite for. That's
A very small audience. The issue is that a very small audience has an appetite for. And I think that's one of the problems that we're in right now in this time, is that in order to capture an audience, you have to be. And I think a lot of people would be much more appreciative if it was a little more center of the road back. I mean, if we're talking about late night,
Letterman
was.
I mean, it was equal opportunity. They made fun of everybody. And they did it in a lighthearted way. And it wasn't the entire show. Everything is all political now. Everything. So 100% of late night is Jon Stewart and Colbert. And whoever else is still on, I don't know if it's Jimmy Fallon on. I have no idea. If they have a guest, they just all talk about how it's hard moving through life right now because we have a fascist in the White House and blah, blah, blah. And it's, I think people used to turn on late night to get away from it all, to just have to laugh. I don't know, not to think about politics all the time. And that's primarily what these dudes talk about. So maybe there's no appetite for that anymore. I mean, clearly there's not, if he's losing that much money every year. So
they all of the other late night hosts, I think, went on Colbert last night and did like a whole like supportive skit with him. And they were like,
that's
in
adorable.
The audience and stuff.
Well, then why don't they have him, like, why don't they talk to their bosses and say, we want him if he's that great and essential. And they're all so sad. Have him go work at your corporation, at your network. Talk to your bosses about it.
I mean, I think if we're going to be honest, the entire model is disappearing.
Yeah.
Like that whole late night.
I mean, the Johnny Carsons of the world are no more. And now we get.
It is sad.
Jimmy Kimmel. Bleh.
All right. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I mean, Malcolm Jamal Warner died. That made me sad.
Yeah.
I mean, were you a Cosby Show family when you were growing up?
Are you kidding me? Who wasn't a Cosby Show? Like our age? Are you kidding me?
We introduced our girls to the Cosby Show.
And I don't even want to talk about, yes, Cosby himself.
No,
is
we don't. I don't even give that. I don't give that caveat anymore, because then we literally wouldn't watch any movies or television. Okay. If so many people.
The
are
show
awful
itself
in
was a great show.
Oh,
it
was
a
gold.
Quality show. It was a family
it was
show.
It was just such a wonderful. It was when TV was good. Is that weird to say? I mean, I know some people think that now we're in like
well,
the golden
I mean,
age
it was
with
different.
Like streaming, but it was different. But anyways, we showed it to our girls like 5 years ago or something, and they couldn't get enough. They loved it. And it was just wonderful. And so for us, like 40-year-olds,
for
I think
Theo
we're all kind of sad. Like,
well,
Theo,
and also because
we grew up with him.
He's close to our, he's like my, he's a little bit, he was a little bit older than my husband.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just, he died on a family vacation in Costa Rica caught in a rip current. Like, I can't even.
I cannot.
It made me really sad when I saw that.
Yeah. I could think there's like only our whole generation kind of grew up watching The Cosby Show, and the kids were all kind of at our age level to where you were going through stuff that maybe
and
they
the parents were relatable what they were
yes.
going through.
And I just, and also, like you said, with the age thing, when you hit our age where it's like 45-ish to 50-ish and you start seeing people your age die, you're like, wait,
yeah.
I'm not there yet, right? Am I? Oh, I am. And so that's weird. But just, I don't know, one of the kids, one of the Cosby Show kids, I don't know, it made me sad. So that was some sad news yesterday.
Yeah. So there's only, I don't really get caught up in celebrity too much. And there's only been like
no.
a handful of celebrities who have passed away that I'm like.
I know.
And this one really shocked me. And then
yeah.
also when Robin Williams passed too.
That
one,
was rough. That one was
that
rough.
One hit
because
me really
he was
hard too.
A legend. Like,
yeah.
think of all of the movies he could have made, the things he could have still done. Like, what a talent.
Yeah.
I always, so. I don't get into the celebrity much. I did get sad when Maggie Smith died. I loved
yeah.
her. But I will tell you when I will shut down. Like, I'll be taking a week or
who?
So. Julie Andrews or Dick Van Dyke. That's it.
Oh, really?
And it's coming for me. Yeah. Well, my favorite movie is Mary Poppins. I love everything about it since I was a little girl. But also, it's Julie Andrews and Dick Van Dyke. And they're both like, I mean, Dick Van Dyke's, I think, going to be 100 in December.
I was about to say, he's still alive?
Yeah, I know. Yes, it's Dick Van Dyke. And Julie, I don't know. Those ones are going to hit me, I think that's...
Anybody else going to be like, I can't think of anyone.
I always get a little... It takes me back when a president dies. That's hard because, I mean, it's history. And so, I mean, yeah, it hits me hard, I guess, when it's a figure like that. But I'm not really big. I remember when, like, Prince died. I had people on my Twitter feed that were, like, crying. I'm like, did you know him? Is he in your family?
I do remember. This is a very weird, but I do remember because I was very into the scene and I was a teenager. But I remember exactly where I was when I found out that Kurt Cobain died from Nirvana.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that was a big one. I remember
yeah,
that
I was
too.
Like, what? That yeah. one at the age of, what was I? Maybe like 15, 14 or something like that. I was just
That
devastated.
Happened just a little bit before I started like
I was
listening
in the ninth grade.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember when, do you remember when Aaliyah died?
I do, but I wasn't really into the scene. And
I wasn't either, but I just remember
surprising.
Going, oh my gosh, it was a
yeah
plane crash. Oh my gosh. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and again, it's because you're young and you're like another young person dies.
Yeah,
it's
like crazy.
Shocking. So,
that's a tangent,
anyways,
but rest in peace, Malcolm Jamal Warner. He was.
Yeah. Pray for his family. It's really unexpected. So
we all watched some Cosby Show clips last night. In his honor. It's
too a good show. Regardless,
oh, show.
Go watch it. It's such
I love
a good
it.
Show. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to go ahead and wrap us up for today's episode of Rivera and Reeves. That's it. That's all we have. We'd love to hear from you. Any thoughts? What do you think about this release from Gabbard? Do you think anything will come of it? Are you not interested? We would love to hear your thoughts. So leave them in the comments. In the meantime, I'm going to go ahead. We're going to dip out. If this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. Make sure you hit that follow button so you don't miss another episode. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday. Leave us a 5-star rating and a lovely review and share it with a friend because it really helps the podcast grow. I really mean that because the algorithms right now are not cooperating. So do us a solid, guys. Do us
Please.
A solid. Also, if you want some merch, there's a link in the show notes. And if you want to be listening to these episodes ad-free and getting a bonus episode once a month of our unfiltered conversations, which we will be recording one this weekend, and get access to the entire archive of our unfiltered episodes, consider becoming a paying supporter. The link is in the show notes. And that's it. That's all we have. Here's a reminder that the media is trash and we have no tolerance for it. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is here. Right now, score up to 80% off everything home, plus fast and free shipping site-wide. Shop now through July 28th at wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile. And you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.